Welcome to your A-Level Psychology Revision Podcast. I'm your tutor, and today we're diving deep into one of the most fascinating and controversial topics on the WGUG specification, the biological approach to therapy, specifically psychosurgery. Whether you're revising for the first time or doing a final pre-exam run-through, this episode is going to give you everything you need to walk into that exam room with confidence. So let's get started. Before we dive into the content, here's what we're covering today. We'll look at the historical development of psychosurgery from Moniz's pioneering work in the 1930s right through to modern deep brain stimulation. We'll then evaluate its effectiveness using real research evidence, tackle the ethical minefield head on, and I'll give you my top exam tips so you know exactly how to structure your answers for maximum marks. We'll finish with a quick-fire quiz to test your recall. Ready? Let's go. Section 1, Core Concepts. So, what actually is psychosurgery? In simple terms, it's brain surgery performed to treat psychological disorders. The key biological assumption underpinning this therapy is localization of function, the idea that specific brain regions control specific behaviors and emotions. If a region is malfunctioning, the logic goes, surgically altering it should reduce the disorder. It also links to the assumption that psychological disorders have a physical, physiological cause, something the biological approach holds central. Now, let's trace the history chronologically because examiners absolutely love it when you demonstrate the refinement of technique over time. We start in 1935 with Iguez Moniz, a Portuguese neurologist, and his colleague Pedro Lima. They performed the very first prefrontal leucotomy. The procedure involved severing the nerve fibers connecting the prefrontal cortex to the rest of the brain. The idea was that the prefrontal cortex was the seat of obsessive, disturbed thinking, and cutting those connections would calm the patient. Moniz used an instrument called a leucotome, a thin rod with a wire loop, inserted through holes drilled in the skull. Controversially, Moniz was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine in 1949 for this work, despite growing evidence of serious side effects. Then, in 1936, American neurologist Walter Freeman and neurosurgeon James Watts adapted the procedure for use in the United States, calling it the prefrontal lobotomy. Freeman was a showman. He performed these operations at a remarkable pace and even took them on the road, traveling state to state. But it was in 1945 that Freeman made his most notorious contribution, the transorbital lobotomy, which became known as the ice pick method. Instead of drilling through the skull, Freeman inserted a modified ice pick, an orbitoclast, through the thin bone of the eye socket above the eyeball and swept it back and forth to sever the frontal lobe connections. This could be done in minutes without a full surgical theater, sometimes using only electroconvulsive shock as anesthesia. Tens of thousands of procedures were performed. The results were often devastating. Patients became passive, lethargic, and socially withdrawn. Some died. The procedure was essentially blind. Surgeons had no way of seeing exactly what they were cutting. This brings us to the critical turning point, the shift to stereotactic psychosurgery from the 1960s onwards. With advances in neuroimaging, particularly MRI scanning, surgeons could now precisely target specific brain structures. Two procedures you must know for WGEC are the bilateral cingulotomy and the anterior capsulotomy. In a cingulotomy, a small lesion is created in the cingulate gyrus, a region involved in emotional processing and the regulation of mood. In a capsulotomy, the target is the anterior limb of the internal capsule, which carries fibers between the frontal lobe and deeper brain structures. These are used primarily for severe treatment-resistant depression and obsessive-compulsive disorder. The key distinction from historical lobotomies is precision. MRI guidance means surgeons know exactly where they are operating, and the lesions are tiny and targeted. The most recent development, and one that addresses many of the ethical concerns, is deep brain stimulation, or DBS. Rather than destroying brain tissue, DBS involves implanting electrodes into specific brain regions, often the subgenual cingulate cortex for depression, and connecting them to a pulse generator implanted in the chest, similar to a pacemaker. Electrical impulses are then delivered to modulate brain activity. The crucial advantage of DBS over traditional psychosurgery is that it is reversible and adjustable. If a patient experiences adverse effects, the stimulation can be turned off or the parameters changed. This makes it far more ethically defensible. Section 2, evaluating effectiveness. Now, let's talk evidence, because this is where you earn your AO3 marks. The key study you must know is Cosgrove et al., published in 2002. Cosgrove and colleagues reviewed the outcomes of stereotactic psychosurgery for treatment-resistant patients. Here are the headline figures you need to memorize. 67% of patients with severe depression showed significant improvement following cingulotomy. For OCD, the success rate was 56%. These are substantial figures, particularly given that these patients had already failed to respond to medication and psychological therapies. They were the most difficult cases. So the therapy is demonstrably effective for a significant proportion of patients who have no other options. However, you must also note the limitations of this evidence. The studies often lack control groups. There's no comparison with patients who receive no surgery. Sample sizes tend to be small, and success is sometimes defined inconsistently across studies. Furthermore, the 67% and 56% figures mean that a substantial minority, 33% and 44% respectively, did not benefit, and some experienced adverse effects. Section 3, Ethical Evaluation, Costs and Benefits. This is the section where many candidates lose marks by being too vague. Saying it is unethical will earn you nothing. You need to use specific ethical concepts. The central ethical issue is irreversibility. Traditional psychosurgery, leucotomies, and lobotomies cause permanent irreversible brain damage. Once those nerve fibers are severed, they cannot be reconnected. This is fundamentally different from drug therapy, which can be stopped, or psychological therapy, which can be discontinued. The permanence of the intervention raises the stakes enormously, and the historical record shows that many patients suffered devastating personality changes, lethargy, social withdrawal, loss of initiative, and in some cases, death. The second major ethical issue is valid consent. This is particularly complex in the context of severe mental illness. Under the Mental Health Act, patients with certain conditions can be treated without their consent. But can a person with severe depression or OCD give truly informed, autonomous consent to an irreversible brain procedure? Critics argue that the very illness that makes the surgery necessary also compromises the patient's capacity to consent meaningfully. This creates a profound ethical dilemma. Historically, psychosurgery was also used in ways that we would now consider deeply unethical on prisoners, on people with learning disabilities, and even on children. Freeman's transorbital lobotomy was performed on patients who had not consented, and in some cases, on patients who were not severely ill. However, applying the costs versus benefits framework, which I strongly recommend you use in your exam answers, we can see that for modern stereotactic procedures and DBS, the ethical picture is more nuanced. For a patient with severe treatment-resistant depression who has tried every available medication and therapy and is at risk of suicide, the potential benefit of a 67% chance of significant improvement may well outweigh the risks. The key is that modern procedures are far more precise, DBS is reversible, and ethical safeguards, including multidisciplinary review panels and independent consent assessors, are now in place. Section 4, Exam Tips and Common Mistakes. Right, let's talk about how to actually get the marks. Here are my top tips. Tip 1, always use chronological ordering when describing procedures. Start with Moniz in 1935, move to Freeman's transorbital method in 1945, then to stereotactic procedures, then DBS. This demonstrates to the examiner that you understand the development and refinement of the technique, and that earns you higher band marks. Tip 2, memorize the Cosgrove statistics. 67% for depression, 56% for OCD. Write them on your hand if you have to. These specific figures are what separates a level 3 answer from a level 4 answer in AO3 evaluation questions. Tip 3. Never confuse psychosurgery with ECT or drug therapy. These are completely different biological therapies. Psychosurgery involves physical alteration of brain structure. ECT uses electrical current to induce seizures. Drug therapy uses pharmacological agents to alter neurotransmitter levels. If you conflate them, you will lose marks. Tip 4. When evaluating ethics, always use the specific vocabulary. Irreversibility, valid consent, the Mental Health Act, personality changes, lethargy, social withdrawal. Generic statements like, it is dangerous or it is unethical will not be credited. Tip 5. Link the therapy explicitly to the biological assumptions. Examiners want to see that you understand why this therapy exists within the biological approach. The key links are localization of function, the idea that specific brain regions control behavior, and the assumption that psychological disorders have a physiological origin. If you make these links explicit, you access the higher AO1 bands. Tip 6. For evaluation questions, use the costs versus benefits framework. Structure your answer as benefits. What does the evidence show about effectiveness? Costs. What are the ethical and practical risks? Verdict, on balance, is the therapy justified and under what conditions? Section 5, Quick Fire Recall Quiz. Cover your notes and try to answer these questions out loud. Ready? Question 1. Who performed the first prefrontal leucotomy and in what year? Answer, Iglesias Moniz and Pedro Lima in 1935. Question 2. What is the ice pick method and who developed it? Answer, the transorbital lobotomy developed by Walter Freeman in 1945 involving an orbitoclast inserted through the eye socket. Question 3. What are the two modern stereotactic procedures you must know? Answer, bilateral cingulotomy and anterior capsulotomy. Question 4. What are the success rates from Cosgrove et al. 2002 for depression and OCD? Answer, 67% for depression, 56% for OCD. Question 5. What makes deep brain stimulation ethically preferable to traditional psychosurgery? Answer, it is reversible and adjustable. The stimulation can be turned off or modified if adverse effects occur. Question 6. Name two specific ethical concerns about psychosurgery. Answer, irreversibility of brain damage and the difficulty of obtaining valid consent from patients under the Mental Health Act. How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back and reread that section before your exam. Summary and sign off. Let's bring it all together. Psychosurgery is the biological therapy you need for WJEC Unit 1. The key narrative is one of evolution. From the crude blind leucotomies of Moniz in 1935, through Freeman's controversial transorbital lobotomy in 1945, to the precision of MRI-guided stereotactic procedures and the reversible innovation of deep brain stimulation. The evidence from Cosgrove et al. Shows genuine effectiveness, 67% for depression, 56% for OCD, but this must be weighed against serious ethical concerns around irreversibility, personality change, and valid consent. Always link the therapy back to the biological assumptions of localization of function and physiological causation. Remember, AO1 is 40% of your marks, so describe procedures accurately and in detail. AO3 is also 40%, so evaluate with specific evidence and ethical concepts. And AO2 is 20%, so apply your knowledge to scenarios if asked. You've got this. Good luck in your exam, and I'll see you in the next episode.